Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
A lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome in to another edition of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Matt Peck, also host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago. You can follow me on Twitter at Bulls underscore Peck. You can follow my co-host Jordan Malley on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, and you can follow us at Locked On Bulls, as well as Facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369, always there for you, our fellow Bulls fans, around the clock, 24-7, 365. Hit us up there with all of your Bulls thoughts, comments, questions, anything Bulls or NBA related, and we will talk with you on that text and voicemail line. Just want to give a quick shout out at the top of today's show to Indochino. Indochino is the world's most exciting made-to-measure menswear company. This week, our Locked On Bulls listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $369 at Indochino.com when entering promo code LOCKEDON at checkout. Check out Indochino. Well, another solo show for me today. Just wanted to give some more expanded thoughts on my viewing of the Dennis Rodman 30 for 30 documentary, for better or worse. Y'all know, if you've listened to me or heard me talk about my relationship with this organization dating back to my childhood, just how big of a Dennis Rodman fan I am. So, of course, I was very eagerly waiting for this documentary to drop. Was on pins and needles all day Tuesday waiting for it. Was so excited to see what different elements of Dennis's life would be revealed in more detail, hear what he had to say about all the facets of his life, not only his basketball career, but everything that led up to that, and his remarkable journey to get to the NBA, and then, of course, everything that he has dealt with in his time in the spotlight and then in his years following his NBA retirement. So much to unpack, and I think that they did a really solid job with this documentary. And also, just a note, earlier this morning, I just finished listening to the complete interview he did with Jackie McMullen, who is just a legend covering the sport of basketball. And it was a really great conversation. Some bits and pieces of their conversation made it into the documentary, but there was so much more in the full interview between Jackie and Dennis that was just such amazing content. And you can find it in, it's actually in the Brian Windhorst Hoop Collective podcast stream on ESPN. So go check that out if you haven't listened to it. Jackie also wrote a really good piece about the interview that they did, and what it is exactly that Dennis is looking for as he still struggles to find some sort of peace and happiness in his later years. And the column Jackie wrote, the interview she did with Dennis were both so good, and really complimented the documentary well. So, okay. I have a lot of feelings about this. When Dennis Rodman came to the Bulls in the summer, or I guess early fall of 1995, there was a lot of hype around this. Obviously, the hype in Chicago was that Michael Jordan had come back from his stint playing baseball, and through just 17 regular season games and then two playoff series, he and Scotty and the Bulls fell short and lost to Shaq and Penny and their old pal Horace Grant in the Orlando Magic in the second round of the 1995 playoffs. And everyone was saying, okay, full offseason, MJ has a full summer to get ready, you know, reshape his game. Maybe they're going to retool the roster a little bit, but we should be about to watch the Bulls get back on top. We got MJ back. Scotty is in his prime. Scotty had some amazing seasons while MJ was gone. There's no reason that the Bulls shouldn't be amazing again this year. And that's, you know, I was just a kid who was so obsessed with the Bulls and so upset when Jordan retired and left to play baseball. When Jordan came back, I was over the moon and I was ready to see this team that I loved more than anything win some more championships. And I was familiar with Dennis because of the stories about the Pistons years. Obviously, when I was just, you know, an 8-year-old kid in 1995, I didn't have vivid memories of the Bulls and Pistons rivalry of the, you know, the late 80s and early 90s because I was very young, but I was aware of who he was. And not only that, but because when he moved from Detroit to San Antonio, and that's when the hair dyeing and the antics and the tattoos and all of that stuff started to come out, and Dennis sort of started to reshape his personality and his persona around Dennis Rodman, the basketball player. So when the Bulls made the trade to get Dennis, I remember the talk around Chicago being like, wow, this guy, this is definitely a bold move for the Bulls. Like, this guy is an amazing basketball player, elite defense, just the best rebounder of all time. But he's got all this baggage. He's got all this weird stuff about him. He's always in the news, and sometimes he's in the news for the wrong reasons, or what some people deem to be the wrong reasons. So I was aware of Dennis Rodman, but I was not ready to just be completely floored by how much I loved him. Because he showed up, and I still remember watching, you know, Bulls media day. Dennis Rodman makes the entrance. He, you know, takes off his hat to reveal his amazing new hairdo with the Bulls logo on the back, red and black color. And I was like, wow, who is this guy? What is this guy's deal? What is his story? And so even as a kid, I just started to do all this research on Dennis Rodman. I read everything about him. His childhood, his upbringing, how he got to the NBA, his years with the Pistons, his short, unsuccessful stint with San Antonio, some of the things that his teammates with the Spurs were saying about him and all the trouble he was getting into. And he's misunderstood and he's this and he's that. And the first time I saw him play in a Bulls jersey, I fell in love with Dennis Rodman, the basketball player. I had never seen anybody play that hard on a basketball court. And it was never about scoring points. We had that guy. We had that guy in MJ, and we had the second guy in Scotty. This team didn't need a guy to score points. And you heard Michael and Scotty both talk about this in the documentary. They saw Dennis as a guy that they needed because he would bring toughness to a team that was lacking it in that playoff run in 1995 when they fell short. And from their personal experience battling Dennis's Pistons, Michael and Scotty, yeah, they had their issues from that rivalry, but they knew how tough Dennis was. And they knew that in San Antonio, he was sort of losing himself and losing sight of why he loved the game, and that they were convinced that it might be tough, but that Phil could wrangle him. Phil could be, you know, a similar light in Dennis's life and a guiding path, much the same way Chuck Daly was in Detroit, and that they could find a way to make it work. And what happens? The Bulls get off to this amazing start in the 95-96 season, of course. At one point, they win 18 games in a row. They break the regular season win record. They go 72-10 and win their fourth title, and Dennis Rodman is a phenomenon. Dennis Rodman takes over the city of Chicago. And some of the stuff you heard in the documentary that, you know, Dennis himself talks about, others talk about it, John Sally talked about it, his old teammate with with Detroit. Also ended up having a short stint in Chicago as well. But the fact that Dennis Rodman in the years of 1995 through 1998 was a bigger star and a bigger celebrity in Chicago than Michael Jeffrey Jordan is not an exaggeration. And it's insane when you fast forward to the present and think back to the glory days of the Bulls and MJ the GOAT. MJ, the greatest of all time, the most beloved outside of probably Walter Payton, professional athlete to come through this city, this amazing sports city. And in the years of that second Bulls three-peat, Dennis Rodman was more popular than MJ. And that's not hyperbole. It's not exaggeration. It's not false. It is accurate. Dennis talking about the, you know, the giant mural, the billboard of Dennis off of I-94 that like caused traffic because everybody was like stopping and getting out of their cars to take pictures of it. He was the megastar of Chicago. More popular than the Pope in Vatican City. That's how one journalist in the documentary put it, and it's spot on. And it's another detail that was in the documentary that I thought about and I completely can validate is that at times when Ray Clay is doing the starting lineup announcements at the United Center, Dennis Rodman gets more cheers than Michael Jordan. The United Center gets louder for Dennis Rodman than for Michael Jordan. And I remember being in the United Center as an 8, 9, 10-year-old kid, screaming my lungs out for Dennis before they got to Michael Jordan, who, of course, was the fifth and final player announced in the starting lineups. I was there. And it's true. Dennis, at times, got louder, more eruptive applause in starting lineups than Michael freaking Jordan. I know I cheered louder for Dennis every time because I so quickly fell in love with him. Everything about Dennis, to me, was what I wanted to watch when I watched basketball. MJ, of course, was the grace, the amazing things he could do with a basketball, just gliding through the air, tongue hanging out, turnaround fadeaway jumpers, making everything look easy. He was God playing basketball, as one of his early rivals, Larry Bird, so famously said. But Dennis was Joakim Noah before Joakim Noah existed. I don't care if my box score has 0 points in it. I don't care if my box score says that I shot the ball zero times tonight. Did I rebound? Did I play defense? And did we win? That's why Bulls fans fell in love with Joakim Noah. And that's why before that, Bulls fans fell in love with Dennis Rodman. The dude could have 22 rebounds and 0 points in a Bulls win, and people loved him for it. Incredible multiple effort plays. The same way you would see Joakim Noah scraping and clawing around the rim, trying to get rebounds, either offensively or defensively, diving around the floor for loose balls. Dennis was the first person in the NBA to say, this is how you play basketball. 200% effort, 300% of the time. And I don't care if I, you know, bang myself up and get some scrapes and some bruises diving, you know, into the stands for this ball that I have a 2% chance of actually saving. I'm going after it. Because what I understand is I want my team to have the ball. I'm going to get the ball. I'm going to get this rebound. I'm going to dive for this loose ball, and I'm going to get it to my teammates who are going to go score us some points. That's what Dennis did, and he did it beautifully. He was a genius of basketball physics. Combined with his effort, that's what made him so great. And that was one of my favorite parts of the documentary was his college coach at Southeast Oklahoma State was talking about how he would get calls and inquiries from, you know, from other coaches, you know, that he had relationships with, to be like, yo, who is this Dennis kid on your team? And how can I teach my players to play and rebound like he does? And Dennis's college coach was like, I wish I could tell you. I didn't teach him how to play that way. I found him playing rec league basketball, and that's what he was doing. And this is a guy who didn't start playing basketball seriously and competitively until he was, you know, given a 3-year scholarship at this, you know, low tier college when he was already in his early 20s. And Dennis saying after a game where he poured in like 25 points and 18 rebounds, going to his coach and saying, you know, I hope I didn't let you down tonight. And his coach saying, hey, man, if that's what you think letting me down is, then you go ahead and let me down every night. But, and it's something that Dennis said repeatedly in the documentary. He talked more in depth about it with Jackie Mack in their interview. He just wanted to play. You know, and when he was going through all of those trials and tribulations of his adolescence and his young adulthood, you know, getting in trouble with the law, getting kicked out of the house by his mom, being homeless for a while, as he was going through this incredible late growth spurt, all he did that made him happy, all he understood, was just going and playing a pickup game of basketball at the park. And that he never really saw it as, well, this is my way out of the projects. This is my way out of the current lot that I find myself in. This is my way to go make a bunch of money and be famous. He just wanted to play basketball. And he was so damn good that he ended up getting drafted into the NBA. And his early years to me are so fascinating now. When you hear the stories about his upbringing, having a mom who wasn't around, but to her credit, wasn't around because she was working, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 jobs to provide for Dennis and his sisters, and having a father who was never there, just abandoned the family. And being misunderstood and not having a lot of friends and hanging out with his sisters and mostly girls because that's all he knew. And he was kind of afraid of guys, and he would get bullied a lot because of his looks, and he would get bullied for hanging out with girls. People thought he was gay and all these things, and all of that. And now all of a sudden he is a college basketball player. And that really interesting part of his life that he talks about in the documentary, and you even had some of the members of, you know, the Rich family talking as well in the documentary about how they became, you know, friends and family of Dennis. Dennis meets this young kid while Dennis is helping, you know, he's like a counselor at this basketball camp, and he meets this 12-year-old kid when Dennis is, you know, like 21, 22 years old, and they form this bond. They form this friendship that some, you know, looking at it from the outside might seem odd. Yeah, here's this, you know, 22-year-old college basketball player, and he spends all his time with this 12-year-old. But so much of what you learn about Dennis is that he, in some ways, faults of his own, but in some ways just the, you know, the situation in which he was brought up, he didn't have a childhood. Not in the, you know, the typical, normal, Pleasantville sense. And so, in his college years, and then even into his early years as a professional basketball player with the Pistons, it was like he was a 23-year-old man, and certainly living in the body of a 23-year-old man, but was still emotionally and mentally at the stage of making sense that his best friend is a 12-year-old kid. And some of the footage that you saw in the documentary of Dennis, like, hanging out at an arcade with kids and, like, playing Papa Shot or, you know, playing pinball and all this stuff. It was like, or his teammates talking about how when they would go out to clubs, Dennis would, like, order a glass of milk. And the partying Dennis didn't come until way later. He was just a kid in a grown man's body, and he didn't know how to be an adult. He didn't know anything. He was just a scared, lonely, awkward kid who just wanted love. And so much credit to Chuck Daly for recognizing that and putting his arm around Dennis when Dennis absolutely needed an arm around him. And I think Isaiah Thomas took it a little too far with his comments in the documentary to say, like, you know, our Pistons teams, you know, with the back-to-back titles and the family, the camaraderie between Dennis and Isaiah and, you know, Rick Mahorn and Bill Laimbeer and Joe Dumars, you know, and Sally, and certainly with their father figure of Chuck Daly, were the only ones in Dennis's professional career who knew how much love and care Dennis needed and who could take care of him. And Isaiah even tears up in the documentary talking about it. And I certainly think that Dennis lost that when his teammates were, you know, being traded off or leaving one by one, and then Chuck resigning obviously got him to a point where it was so dark, where you have that part of Dennis's story where he's sitting, you know, in his truck outside the Palace of Auburn Hills one night with a loaded shotgun, you know, in his lap. And Dennis talks about how he, you know, he turns on the radio, he's listening to Pearl Jam, and then he falls asleep. And then, you know, the cops find him the next morning in the parking lot with a loaded gun in his lap, and then it makes headlines. And everybody starts freaking out and talking about, you know, is Dennis Rodman suicidal? Is he this? Is he that? And Dennis felt alone. That, to me, that is the crux of what Dennis was feeling at that point, which was his darkest, and what Dennis continues to battle with. Feeling alone. Feeling unloved. And that explains so much of his behavior. Anywhere on his path from adolescence all the way through to now being a near 60-year-old grandfather and father, feeling alone, feeling unloved, just wanting to feel accepted and loved. And the, you know, the early legal trouble that I briefly mentioned a minute ago is, I think, a great example of that, because you heard Dennis tell the story about, you know, what exactly happened there. And it's, you know, more detail than I had ever heard before, but because everybody has seen or remembers seeing the mugshot of a young Dennis Rodman who is crying while he's getting his mugshot taken at, like, the, you know, the Dallas-Fort Worth airport police station, where Dennis had been working as a janitor at the airport, and he decides while he's, you know, working the night shift and, you know, sweeping the floor or whatever, that he's going to steal a bunch of watches from this airport shop. And he gets caught because, of course, it's a airport and there are security cameras everywhere. But they drop the charges on Dennis when he goes to court because he didn't sell the watches. He didn't steal watches to sell them and make money for himself. He stole the watches to give out free watches to people so that people would like him. And to me, that is the perfect example of a childish, adolescent, bad decision that has consequences. And Dennis has made similar adolescent bad decisions that have consequences through his adult years, but all of them can be traced back to his want and need to feel loved and accepted by people around him. And it's so tragic to me. In some ways, he is the most misunderstood person in professional sports. With all of the antics, the Sports Illustrated covers where he's, you know, dressed in, you know, black latex and doing interviews talking about, you know, bisexuality and having homosexual fantasies and his, you know, his love and enjoyment he gets out of cross-dressing or dressing flamboyantly or doing this or doing that and showing up to a book signing in a wedding dress and dating these famous women who were, you know, just paparazzi everywhere. Everything. Dennis, in his later years, post-retirement, just being the life of the party. His ex-wife talking in the documentary about how it was like they had a system. It was like, we're going to party five nights in a row, and then we're going to regroup, and then we're going to party for five more nights in a row. And that was even going on when Dennis was still playing. The Bulls were in playoff series, and he was going to Vegas in between games to party. And all of it was about Dennis trying to get people to like him. Once Dennis's playing career was over and he was still trying to figure out how to surround himself with people that liked him and people that could offer him some kind of, you know, adoration or love was, all right, well, if I can't be the center of attention on a basketball court, I got to be the center of attention at these parties, wherever it is, New Orleans, Vegas, L.A., New York. I got to go be the life of the party so I have people around me to show me love. And so much of that is, it's to say he's misunderstood, it's not wrong, but in so many ways to me, it's so simple to understand all of his actions and the reasons for his actions. And I thought that was another really heartbreaking, but really strong part of the documentary is one of his former bodyguards who was telling a story about how, you know, there was like one time in particular they were out partying or whatever, and, you know, Dennis was, you know, buying people shots and the, you know, life of the party and all this and all that, and all these hangers on, these parasites that surrounded Dennis because they wanted a taste of his money, they wanted a taste of his fame. And his former bodyguard saying, like, Dennis, like, I it's so hard for me to watch you do this, man, because, like, you know, these people, they're using you. They are using you. And he said, Dennis turned to me and said, you think I don't know that? You think I don't know that these people don't give a shit about me? I'm pretty sure, like, that's pretty much verbatim how that part of the documentary went, as his former bodyguard was recalling that moment in time. Dennis Rodman saying, you think I don't know that these people don't give a shit about me, as he's throwing money everywhere. It's heartbreaking because in that sense, Dennis knew what he was doing. He knew that he was letting people use him because it gave him some level of satisfaction of feeling loved and wanted and appreciated. And he knew so much of it was fake. He knew so much of it was people using him. And he did it anyway. Because that's how badly he felt the need to be loved and accepted. And to me, whether it was that's how he dealt with parasites around him as a celebrity, or that's how he has failed to deal with his family life, It's a remarkably, like, fascinating parallel, because Dennis, and he talks about this a lot with Jackie Mack in the interview and the documentary as well. He talks about how constantly the biggest thing he's struggling with right now, the biggest demon, he calls it a demon, is trying to tell himself that he's a good father, because he clearly knows that in his life so far, he has not been a good father. So, again, like the letting people use him because it makes him feel loved, and it's something that he is aware that he's doing, and he does it anyway, and he can't get out of it. He is aware of the fact that he is a bad father. He knows what he's doing, keeping his family at a distance. And if the reasoning behind that for Dennis is, I don't know how to love people, I don't know how to let them in, I don't know how to hug my children or my grandchildren, because I never got that love myself as a child. Talking about his mother never hugging him, never saying I love you, dealing with the, you know, the abandonment that his father, you know, put Dennis through. And then years later saying how hurt he was when out of nowhere Dennis's dad shows up out of the blue and is like signing autographs and doing interviews, sitting at the United Center at a Bulls game. And then also, you know, coming up to him as Dennis is coming into the parking lot for practice one day, and, you know, Dennis's dad walks up to his car window and is like, hey, man, I need to tell you, like, I'm your dad. And then Dennis's dad goes on to, like, write a book about Dennis, and it's a bestseller, and he makes a bunch of money, and it breaks Dennis's heart. And all of that means Dennis never felt love from his father figure, that, like, his actual father. He felt love from father figures like Chuck Daly and like Phil Jackson, but never felt love from his father, felt he didn't get enough love from his mother, and somehow has used that part of his past and who he is and his identity to shield himself from the love that's right there waiting for him with his current family. Yes, he and his ex-wife have a rocky relationship, and she was brutally honest about Dennis in the documentary, which I appreciated. There's no point in sugarcoating it. Dennis Rodman has not been a good father to his children. There's no point in trying to pretend it's anything else. But just because he and his ex-wife have a rocky relationship does not mean he can't be there for his kids. His oldest daughter, who from his first marriage now has a child of her own. Or his younger two kids, his son, who is a college basketball player at Washington State, his daughter plays on the U-20 team for the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team. And Dennis says in this documentary, he says, talking to Jackie Mack, yeah, like, you know, my younger daughter, she only lives like 10 miles away. I'm actually supposed to go see her after this interview's over, and I'm just terrified about what I'm going to do and what I'm going to say. And it's like, he also said that, and I don't know if I believe this part, but when he was talking to Jackie Mack, he was talking about how sometimes he finds it hard to just be in his kid's life because he doesn't know if they want just him and him to be around and him to be a dad, or if they want material things. And that's the part where I was like, and I don't know a whole lot about Dennis's kids and their personality and the way that they have behaved around Dennis in the small amount of times that they've interacted through their young lives, but that to me was the part that was hard to believe, where Dennis was trying to say, well, part of the reason that I'm reluctant to just love my kids and be there for them, because Jackie, and God bless Jackie Mack for continuously, you know, supporting Dennis and encouraging him in their conversation about him being a parent, because she was nothing but encouraging and saying there's still time. You might feel regret about being a bad father, but there's always still time to fix this. There's still time to form new bonds and improve the relationship. There's still time. And I love that from Jackie, because you can clearly tell she cares about Dennis. And at the end of their interview, Dennis talks to her about how much he has always appreciated her being a positive impact in his life. But when he was trying to say to Jackie Mack, sometimes I just wonder if my kids just want money or want material things, and that's part of why I have trouble just giving them love. That was, to me, I was like, okay, Dennis, you know what? I call bullshit on that. Because, you know, it's not true across the board. Of course, there are some people who put more importance on material things and money than on the love of parents. But I'm guessing most people who go through their childhood and adolescence and young adult life without positive parental role models, if given the choice between having an absentee parent who would put money in their bank account or a parent who was there for them, supporting them, loving them, being in their life, you clearly picked the latter, especially if you didn't have the latter. And that's what Dennis didn't have.
That's the part to me that is so frustrating and so heartbreaking about all of this. It's that Dennis is aware that he is doing exactly to his kids what he felt so wronged by in his childhood. And so much of it is just Dennis being frozen by fear of knowing how to love and how to be loved. And he tried to get all different kinds of fake love when he was, meanwhile, forming a Hall of Fame basketball career. That's why it's always been such a fascinating story to me. And at the end of the documentary, you know, of course, it's always nice to relive the glory days for the Bulls, but I found myself not caring as much about that part of the story. Like my buddy John Sabine from Outsiders, when we were chatting about it, when we were recording a Bulls Outsiders podcast earlier this week, he was like, you know, I was kind of disappointed that there wasn't more basketball and there wasn't more like Bulls three-peat stuff in there. And I, you know, I thought about it for a second. I was like, well, yeah, I guess it was pretty short. Like the Bulls Rodman part of the documentary was actually pretty short. It's a 2 hour doc. You know, with commercials, it was probably closer to like hour and a half, hour 45. But it kind of, you know, it was only a small part of the story. But I didn't mind it because that is not the full story of Dennis Rodman. And I got to the end of the documentary and I found myself thinking about how I feel about Dennis. Because it's been such a, you know, complicated, vexing part of my life as a Bulls fan. Because as I said when I started talking about this, that I fell in love with Dennis Rodman, the basketball player, and Dennis Rodman, the person. I was fascinated by him and I loved him. And everything that he's been through since leaving the game of basketball has just been so complicated. And some of it is maddening. And I was just left heartbroken at the end of the documentary because it kind of leaves off on a will he or won't he? This fascinating person that is one of the most famous, most recognizable people in the world who's had this crazy life. Will he find happiness at some point before he leaves this earth? And it did not end on a very uplifting note. And it seems like Dennis himself is wondering if he will ever be able to find happiness and is not convinced that he will. And when Jackie Mack ended their interview with asking Dennis what makes Dennis Rodman happy these days, he didn't really have an answer. And for all of the different ways that you can fault this man and hold him accountable, and his ex-wife and his children should continue to hold him accountable and encourage him to believe that all they want is for him to be in their lives. I found myself still rooting for Dennis at the end of this documentary. You can make a list of his faults and a list of his misdeeds, but like what I saw at the end of this documentary was just still a kid in a grown man's body just looking for love in all the wrong places and ignoring the love that's staring him in the face, that just wants to be loved and love him back. And that's all his life has ever been about, and he hasn't figured it out, and it's heartbreaking. I highly recommend watching it if you haven't. Those are my thoughts on the Dennis Rodman 30 for 30, for better or worse. Like I said, definitely also give a listen to his full interview with Jackie McMullen. You can find that under Brian Windhorst, the Hoop Collective podcast for ESPN. And I would love to hear your thoughts. If you guys watch the Dennis doc, I would love to hear your thoughts on it. You can throw those into our mailbag text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369.
Hopefully we can get Jordan's thoughts on the documentary either later this week or early next week. But it was, for as much as I was looking forward to it and as much as I was anticipating it, I was not disappointed. I was heartbroken. But as far as a piece of cinematic work and a documentary about a player who has always been one of my favorites and one of the athletes that I've been so fascinated by, I think the documentary does a pretty darn good job. So, we'd love to hear your thoughts on it. 331-979-1369. That's going to do it for today. Thank you for listening. I know I just talked for, what, damn near 40 minutes about one topic, and that being Dennis Rodman. Hopefully you found my thoughts on it interesting, and I would love to hear yours. So, until next time, for Jordan Malley, Matt Peck saying thank you so much for listening to Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Appreciate all of you out there in Bulls Nation. Appreciate those of you who are going back and forth with me about Dennis on Tuesday night on Twitter after the doc aired. Much love to all of you out there, and we will talk to you next time. Peace out.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com